welcome back to Elevation Trail with me, Tim Long, and Gary David. Gary, how are you doing? Are you in your new office today?
I am in my new office today. It's fantastic. It's a corner office in a new wing of the faculty kind of building where they pen the faculty in. And it's great. I have three windows. A little bit of a problem yesterday when I was changing in my office before and after my run. But luckily, school's out, so no police had to be called for indecent exposure.
Young freshman girls walking by, and you're standing there in your Lycra shorts with no shirt on.
Luckily, students don't come to offices anymore. The thing that killed office hours is email. Because students don't come by. I'm not the only one to experience this. So at least there's that. Two very exciting things just happened to me yesterday.
What's that?
Very exciting things. So number one, I gave a webinar for USA Cycling.
Oh, yeah. How'd that go last night, right?
Yeah, measuring economic impact of race events. And who the hell knows how it went? I'm sitting here in my office looking at my computer screen, going through a PowerPoint. Gotten pretty good feedback so far, but who knows? But it was fun. I appreciate the opportunity to do that. About 28 people on the webinar earning continuing education credits for their race director licenses. So that was exciting. Huh. And the other thing that was exciting, I ran on a track yesterday.
Holy cow.
I did 200s on a track.
200 what?
Meters. 200 meter intervals. Eight of them. Eight.
A whole eight.
Well, I ran before that. I kind of ran tempo before getting to the track, and then I went, I want to go run on the track today. So I went out there and did 200 meters meters easy.
That's like 1 mile.
No, because I would do 200 meters. Well, yeah, of speed.
Okay.
But I would do 200 meters hard, 200 meters easy. Uh-huh. I did four of those twice. So I did I did two by, four by 200 on, 200 off.
That's impressive.
Isn't that impressive?
Yeah.
I was on the track. I did speed work.
I'm going to add that to my repertoire for my athletes.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. I was worried about not being able to walk this morning, but I was able to get up and be ambulatory still. So that was
And I know why, too. Because you were so excited this morning. Gary emailed me at like 4 o'clock in the morning to have me get on a web call with him, a video call, and asked me if his hair looked okay because he was so excited for the show today, which we'll get into in a minute.
Number one, my hair always looks okay.
It does. Your hair, you have good hair.
Number two, so what if I emailed you at 4 o'clock in the morning?
Yep. So anyway, what else is going on? Anything else new? How's the motorcycle?
I haven't been able to ride it because Mom's still in town, so it's still being hidden.
Okay.
I am going to go take it out on Sunday, and I'm just trying to plan my two races, Midnight Ride of Cyclocross and the Fruitlands Cup of Cyclocross, coming up pretty soon. So trying to get those things in order, making sure stuff that needs to be ordered is ordered, and the like. So just getting ready for the race season, getting ready for school to start, and trying to figure out how much I'm going to race this fall.
Yeah.
And my road got paved, repaved.
Well, good. That's very exciting. All good news.
That's very exciting. Yeah. How about you?
Well, no one really cares about my life, and I want to get into our guest
anyway.
Today because pretty excited to have him back on. I can't believe it's been a long time since I know you are.
I'm very excited.
Everybody knows you are. In fact, we had a guy on Facebook I posted that we're going to have our guest on soon and asked if anyone had questions, and someone's already posted that the reason that Nick Clark stopped blogging was because of you. So, which leads us to our guest, Nick Clark. I really appreciate being on the show today. He's fresh off his morning run there on the Front Range of the beautiful Colorado. And how are you doing this morning, Nick?
Yeah, I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no, it's our pleasure, truly, especially one of us. So, let's get started right off the bat. Where the hell have you been?
Right here in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Yeah, but your blog is like I was going through it, and I used to your writing is amazing. For one, I mean, you're one of the best ultra runner writers out there, and so you know, I mean, literally, you're one of the top three that I read, and you just stopped all of a sudden.
Yeah, and now I give you nothing to read.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, I don't know what happened there. I guess I just got out of the habit, and then once you get out of the habit, it's hard to kind of get back into the rhythm. You know, I'm an editor, writer-editor by profession, so a lot of my work day is taken up with writing and editing, and or at least it used to be. So an update on what Nick's up to is that I actually quit my job July 15th, so about a month ago, so no longer working for the man. So a little more time on my hands, so perhaps I'll kickstart that blog again.
This ties into your new profession, I imagine. It must be going really well then, right? The race directing?
Yeah, the race directing is going great. Yeah, that's certainly part of it. My wife is, she just graduated from graduate school, or in fact, well, she's in the process of graduating from graduate school. So she's back to work in back in the school system as of this upcoming semester. So that certainly helped. The race directing has proven to be successful. You know, we've worked hard to build a business here, and we just pulled off the Never Summer 100K in the end of July, which is a huge success, we thought, up at Cameron Pass, about an hour and a half west of Fort Collins, up just north of Rocky Mountain National Park. And so that's going well, and life is good.
Yeah.
Well, I know your wife is went to graduate school for special education, and I know they make a mint. I mean, they just make a lot of money. Special ed teachers.
I'm now a kept man. Yes.
Exactly. If you want to travel the world and just be able to accumulate a fortune, special education absolutely the place you want to be. So I can see why you'd be able to quit.
Yeah.
Just
and you know what, Gary? Yeah, I think that you and Dana. I can't remember if you exchanged emails or did you meet her sometime. But I know that she listened to you, and you were a big part of her decision to go back to school. So thanks for that.
Well, met her. I helped take care of your damn kids at Leadville that one year while you were off getting interviewed for. Run Far. I was sitting there with Dana as you were around on doing what God knows what. I've met Dana. But this is how it works, right? The men always forget who's taking care of the children.
Well, it's me now. That's the other side of the gig. I'm now the primary caregiver, as they call it in this country. Speaking of Leadville, actually, so I'll be out there, it's not this weekend, but next weekend, August 22nd. And I got a pretty exciting pacing gig lined up. I'm going to be pacing Mike Ashe. I'm excited about that. That's going to be a fun time.
Which 25 miles of it is it going
to
be?
So the last 25. So from what used to be Fish Hatchery to the finish.
That's where he needs it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you're the man that can do it too. So
his bad section was coming down off of Hope Pass, so the downhill there. So. He seems to be in great form and primed and ready to, I think, post a pretty impressive time next weekend.
Good. Yeah.
You guys can just talk about rugby the entire time.
That or cricket.
Yeah, him being a Kiwi, and you playing rugby formerly, so I think you guys have a lot to talk about. Fantastic. So what are your plans when you're in Leadville? What else are you going to be doing? Any kind of signings, any kind of fan events, any kind of run with Nick? What's going on?
There'll be none of that.
None of that.
Okay. It'll be a quick trip. I'll probably go up on the morning, come back that night.
If someone wanted to find you, just someone wanted to find where you were staying while you were in Leadville, where might one look?
I'll be out on the course, Gary. Fish Hatchery, Twin Lakes, those locations.
All right, great. Good to know.
Fish Hatchery, he'll be there probably, I'd say they'll probably, start around 3 or 4 p.m., something like that.
I'd have to do the math.
So there, Gary, there you are.
Yeah, well, I look forward to it. And Nick has had some impressive results as well. I was looking at his ultra sign up. Congratulations on your big win at the Pilot Hill 25K.
Yeah, thank you.
That was awesome in Laramie. Yeah. That was impressive.
That's actually, so I'm, I believe, five-time winner of that now.
Congratulations.
Yeah, no, it's a good running community up there in Laramie. I always enjoy going up there to run.
And also,
the Masters record holder. Anyway,
There you go. Well, and the and the Jemez Mountain 50 miler as well.
Yes, 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 yes. Now, I think 3-time winner of that event.
Oh.
And, yeah, formerly course record holder. Anton went in there and cherry-picked it last year on the rerouted course.
That guy.
Yeah, that guy.
Unbelievable. So to get back to the NAR stuff, I mean, your race directing is, you were primed for that because you had built a name in ultra running.
Mm-hmm.
People respected you. People knew that you, knew who you were and all that. So it was kind of a nice transition to bring the trails where you live up in Fort Collins, Colorado. You have an extensive trail network over there. And so mm-hmm. you kind of opened that up to the ultra community. I mean, I'm surprised that it hadn't been done before.
Yeah, I mean, so were we, to be honest with you. There have been some smaller trail races on those trail networks in the past, but typically organized by guys from more of a road running background, so they never really had that tie into the trail running community.
Hmm.
So there would be kind of smaller number events. So yeah, when Pete and I stepped up to kind of develop this business, we obviously had a good community of runners and a good reputation amongst those runners to draw from, and it's just proven really successful. And the locations sell themselves. We have great land managers that we work with, it's kind of gone from strength to strength. So we're excited for the future. We've got some fun plans ahead.
You're selling these things out.
Yeah, so, this 100K that we put on, the Never Summer 100K, we imposed a cap at 200. That was self-imposed. Land managers were willing to let us put more on the course, but obviously first-year event in a pretty logistically challenging location and remote location, we wanted to make sure that we could, we had numbers that we could handle. That sold out within a couple of months, and generally super positive feedback from the event, and so we hope to grow that one next year, put a 50K in as well, and make it a just a fun kind of mountain getaway weekend. The other one's Quad Rock, has sold out in 4 years we've done it, and we got the Black Squirrel Trail Half coming up in 3.5 weeks. That one's sold out first 2 years and on track again this year, so yeah, all is good.
That's awesome. What's your goal with this? Are you going to keep growing the number of races or the size of them, or are you pretty much, have an idea of where you want to get to it and then just kind of maintain and just kind of refine each race?
Yeah, I mean, we've always kind of had a growth but slow growth strategy. We want to keep it sustainable, make sure that we're not overextending ourselves with regards to the number of races we're putting on and making sure we know what we're doing. It's a learning process. We feel like we have a pretty good organizational setup now. But I think, we're going to grow, hopefully, the Never Summer race by adding in the 50K. We hope we can get 400, 450 people up there next year. We have ideas for other races, but like I said, we really don't want to overextend ourselves and, be putting on races where we're getting 50 people to them just for the sake of having another race on the series. So,
yeah.
We take our time. Never Summer, we planned that thing for 2 years before we launched the event. So we like to make sure we got all the pieces in place and that we're well organized before we pull the trigger.
Yeah.
I will say this, though. We actually just got the contract to manage the Horsetooth Half Marathon here in Fort Collins, and that's actually a road half marathon. It'll be in its 44th year next year, and that's one of the biggest half marathons in the state, and definitely in Fort Collins. So that's actually a big step for us, and we're really excited about the prospects for that race too.
Congratulations! Who was managing that before? Was it a school or something like that?
Well, no, it's owned by the Fort Collins Running Club. So they contracted it out to a local race management company here in Fort Collins, but they put it up for bid this year. The contract with the previous race director was up with this year's race, and so they put it out to bid, and we got the bid.
So, that's awesome, man. And the other side of NAR Runners is Pete Stevenson.
That's correct.
How's he doing? I haven't spoken with him in years.
Pete's doing great. He did the Grand Slam like I did. He did it a couple of years before I did. I think he did it in 2010.
Yeah.
And as happens to a lot of Grand Slammers, apparently, he kind of got himself into a bit of a funk there running-wise for a couple of years, just kind of low energy, similar kind of symptoms to the overtraining stuff that we've been seeing amongst some other high-profile athletes in the sport. But he seems to have pulled himself out of that, and running-wise, you know, he's really getting back into good shape, and he's doing great. He's still doing his, volunteers down at Animal House, and does a lot of dog training, which is great, and he's heavily involved in that. And we have a great working relationship. He's a very detail-oriented guy, so he's kind of the operations side of the event, and I'm more the kind of, ooh, look at me. Come run my race.
Kind of guy.
So it works well. It works well. It's a good relationship.
Yeah. Well, please say hi to him for me. And like I said, I haven't talked to him in a while, and I always admired him, both for his obviously his running and also the work he does with the mm-hmm. with the dogs and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's awesome, man. I'm super impressed that one, and you took the jump and left the job to one take care of your kids while Dana's in starting her new career. And two, that, you know, this new gig is going so well. I mean, you've really kind of, like you said, you lined up all the pieces beforehand, and it paid off, because honestly, being a former race director, I know that it's as much work to put on a race that has only 20 people in it as it is mm-hmm. if it has 400. I mean, you're doing right. the same amount of stuff. So it's smart to get everything in place and make it really, you know, great the first time, so you end up with a lot of people and recoup some of that expense. So in terms of like sponsorships and stuff for the races themselves, did you bring mm-hmm. over a lot of the ultra connections that you have, or is it more local kind of sponsors?
Yeah, I mean, we have a mix of national and local sponsors. Initially, our first race, kind of new race that we created was Quad Rock. That's going back 4 years. And at the time, I was personally sponsored by Pearl Izumi, amongst other sponsors. I kind of brought those guys in, and they sponsored the event. So that's... as my personal sponsorship transition to Ultra. So the kind of event has also, so they're the title sponsor for, or sorry, the presenting sponsor for the race series this year, and half of it last year. So that's been a great working relationship, and we hope to continue that into 2016 and beyond.
Yeah, those guys do a lot of individual mm-hmm. athlete sponsorships too. I was kind of looking over their page, drooling at, at their shoes, and they have a ton of not only the elite sponsorship level, but I was looking at their ambassador page, and I don't mm-hmm. know what that includes, but there's like an army of people on that page. So how do they make money? I mean, do they sell any shoes, or they just give them all away?
Ultra. I mean, obviously, you know, they have a very kind of grassroots marketing campaign where it comes to runners. So they have a mix of what they call ambassadors, and that's kind of a pro deal type arrangement. I'm not sure the exact details of how that works. I think they do some free seed shoes as well. These are all passionate runners who are out there and are passionate about running, passionate about ultra, and just getting out there and letting people know about the shoes. Then they also have kind of, the higher profile athletes, the more performance oriented athletes, elite, if you want to call them that, who are probably on a slightly different deal with ultra. Yeah. It's a brand that is just growing at an amazing pace.
I know.
A lot of exciting stuff going on.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, but I was just thinking, I used to run with Brian Beckstead off mm-hmm. and on. I raced against him in a 100K a few years ago. It was the last time I saw him. And he and, I can't remember the other guy's name, started that company.
There's three of them, Golden Harper, Brian, and Jeremy Howlett, yeah.
Yeah. And they ended up selling it shortly thereafter. And I wonder, mm-hmm. I mean, do you think that selling it, let me put it this way, do you think Ultra where it's at now would be there if those guys did not sell it? Was that something that was necessary to do to take it to another level?
Yeah, without a shadow of doubt.
Yeah, they just couldn't maintain.
Well, you know, they had inventory problems at the time of the sale, and yeah, they needed an investor if they were going to fulfill orders. Then, you know, they didn't have the working capital to fulfill orders, get the manufacturing done. So they needed a big infusion of cash, and that's exactly what they got with you know, when Icon came in and bought them out, essentially. And, you know, Icon is, so it's a company in Salt Lake City. They have a number of fitness brands. If you've seen, what's it called? The iFit. Jillian Michaels has been on TV for the last, I don't know, 6 months selling this. It's a Nordic Track treadmill. So Nordic Track is one of their brands, and ProForm and a bunch of other fitness equipment brands. So it's, you know, it's a well-capitalized business, and you know, they've thrown a ton of cash at Ultra, you know, you're seeing the results of that. It's not unlike the Hoka story.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, one of the things I want to ask you, Nick, is you have virtually no social media footprint whatsoever.
Right.
Gary would know.
Yeah, you have no Facebook page. I don't think you're on Twitter. Your blog is about 2 years old. So. Uh-huh. Going back to the sponsorship thing, it seemed like a requirement for a lot of athletes is even more than results to have presence. And so how do you, you know, as a person who as an elite level athlete in Ultra and now as a race promoter, you know, what's that all about that you're not really on social media that I could discern, but yet you are able to secure these sponsorships?
Well, that's a valid question. Yeah, so well, I mean, I'm on Facebook and Twitter through NAR Runners, so obviously that, but you know, that's not a personal thing. You know, for me, it's more about personal contacts. You know, I'm heavily involved in the running community here in Fort Collins and more broadly on the Front Range, you know, there's great value to that. It's all good and well being active on social media, but if you're kind of a hermit in the middle of nowhere just pumping out stuff on social media, there's only so much value that you can get out of that. I think there's a legitimacy to personal contact, and you know, if you're somebody that people respect because you put time and effort into creating community, then I think there's a legitimacy to that for a brand if they have somebody out there who's making those contacts and talking to people and putting people in shoes. So we do all kinds of training runs. I bring out tech reps to those training runs, et cetera, et cetera. So you might not see it plastered across the internet over there in on the East Coast, but you know, here locally, there's certainly a lot of action going on. And then obviously through the races too. So there's that tie-in.
Tim can give you his selfie stick so you can take pictures of yourself. Because Tim has a selfie stick that he runs with.
I don't know. I also have kind of, and I'm sure others do, just a hard time with that kind of self-promotion part, especially when it comes to self-promoting on the internet. But
I mean, it's a tricky thing because, you said the word, you know, established community. So you're creating a running community, and you were doing that before you had your whole event management business.
Right.
So you're creating this running community, and then not for the purposes of selling gear, but because you have this community, you are able to then promote these items to this group that, you know, will attend these kinds of events. So I hate to say it's like old school or old fashioned, but it is kind of a throwback. Unfortunately.
You know, that's just the way I go about it. I there's nothing wrong with, you know, people who are getting sponsorships by having a big following online. There's great value to that too, I'm sure. For me, it's just a little more legitimacy to, you know, if it's real human interaction.
Gotcha.
And Gary, it's not a selfie stick. It's a film creation extension.
Oh, I see. Well, I got the label wrong. See, I just thought you were taking pictures of yourself, but I didn't know it was a media content generating device.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
And I don't use it all the time. Only when I run and walk and sit at my desk. So you know, the sponsorship topic is something that Gary and I have been talking about this week, and especially that's been accelerated from the Nick Simon's fiasco with the USATF and not being able to – well, I wouldn't say he's not able to. He was certainly able to run for the team. He chose not to because of the crazy contract. If anyone hasn't read this, instead of me fumbling through trying to get the story out, go ahead and just Google it and read it yourself. But basically, he runs for Brooks. USATF is heavily funded and sponsored by Nike. So in the contract, they say that he can't bring his Brooks gear with him. Basically, it's exactly what they wrote to him. They just said, you can only bring unbranded stuff, and you have to wear the Nike USATF team outfit the whole time that you're, at the World Championships or whatever. So he declined that, and there's been a huge fallout from that. And I think, personally, my opinion of it has changed. At first, I was like, God, what a baby, Just you sign up with a team, you're running for the United States or, your country, whatever. You wear the uniform, just don't ask questions, just go and do it. And then it's changed over time after reading more and more about it to the, it reminds me of Prefontaine, and he's kind of standing up for a lot of other people instead of just hit the greed in his pocket and himself. It's something that it's important. What came out of this for me was we got to see some of the where the finances go with the USATF and how much they actually get from Nike every year. It's something like $20 million a year, I think, or something like that, and how small of a percentage goes directly to the athletes from that. So it's kind of it brought up some topics. One is, what is the responsibility of sponsors with their athletes? Nick, you've been a sponsored athlete now on a little smaller tier, in ultra running, obviously, because it's a smaller sport. Mm-hmm. But, you understand that. You were with, like you said, you were with Pearl Izumi for a while. They had a raging team going for a while. They had Timmy Olsen, they had you, Debo, Dylan Bowman. They had Scott Hyman.
Darcy Africa.
Yeah, Darcy. They had this crazy team going for a short period, and then all of a sudden it just poof, and it was gone. And now I think Scott Hyman is the last person running around in their shorts.
Last man standing.
Yeah, what is the deal with that? It just goes to show that in ultra running is a lot like some other sports like motocross, and Gary wants to talk about MMA and stuff like that, where there's a small window of opportunity to actually make a living at it, and then all of a sudden it's the rug's just pulled out from underneath you. Is that kind of what happened? Did they just send you a letter and say, "Oh, the team's done"?
The writing was perhaps on the wall for a year or two leading up to when I decided to part ways with Pearl. And that it was an eye-opener for me, and that was certainly part of the reason why I looked to do something a little more sustainable in terms of putting on races and working with brands through the races rather than through my own personal sponsorship. So, any conversations that I have with brands these days is really geared much more towards the event management side of things than it is to my own personal representation. And that's probably part of the reason why I don't really blog much anymore, or I don't blog at all anymore. I'm not really that fussed about social media. Pearl decided to go in a different direction. Basically, they took the budget that they had for a small number of quote unquote pro athletes, and they used that to grow a larger grassroots promotional effort. So, that would be similar to what Ultra is doing with their ambassador program. It's a much larger number of people, not I won't say household names, but your everyday runner who's passionate about running and the brand, throw them a couple of free pairs of shoes a year and discounted gear. And, then you've got 150, 200 people out there as opposed to four or five. It was just basically a change of marketing strategy.
That's interesting you say that, because it seems like they've fallen off the face of ultra running. And not only in terms of just perception, but I still love their shoes, and I went to order a pair, I don't know, 3 weeks ago or whatever, and they seem to have a pretty light inventory, especially in the trail running section. I mean, the one pair that I wanted, they had two sizes, 7 and 14. Yeah. And it was like, so it just, I don't know where they were going with it. It seems, I know it's a small market, and their cycling has always been huge. I mean, I've been wearing their cycling gear for 25 years.
Right. Well, cycling is probably 90% of Pearl's business. So, you know, if you consider it from that angle, and you know, so the run, getting it up and off the ground has been a very expensive proposition for them, and it has been kind of propped up by the cycling side of things, as I understand it. You know, whether or not it's sustainable today, I don't know. It was a little frustrating because they put a lot of time and effort into developing a reputation in the trail ultra space, and you know, their first kind of go around with the shoes, you know, mixed results. Some shoes were okay, some were not great, and then, you know, they came out with the EE Motion line, and you know, that was you know, it was a great line, a lot of success, people loved them, and then boom, all of a sudden they kind of dropped all their athletes, which, you know, to me that was kind of unfortunate timing. But, you know, there were some personnel changes behind the scenes there at Pearl, and that was part of it. And, you know, there's a lot of things that go into it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too bad. Like you said, that Emotion came out, and it was actually a really nice shoe. That's why, like I was saying, that the trail shoes were just kind of non-existent when I went to order them, so I ended up getting road shoes, you know, the exact same shoe in the road version, which, whatever. So if I slide off the face of a mountain, it's Pearl's fault.
Pearl's fault.
Yeah. So, I mean, which it kind of brings me to my next question is, you know, the fragility of these relationships. And, you know, you get a hot athlete, say someone like, you know, Rob Krar, who I think he stopped doing his job as a pharmacist to run full-time now and follow his dream, which is working out well for him at the moment. But you hang your hat on something like that, and say you're not a Rob Krar that has a great career to fall back on. Obviously, you can go back into the pharmaceutical field anytime he wants. But say you're a runner who doesn't really have that, you know, background, and you know you don't have the option to go back to anything great financially, and you hang your hat on this sport, and all of a sudden it's gone, you know, and either through injury on your own behalf, or the sponsorship decides to just pull up shop and move on. Do you think that there's, I mean, where do you think this is going to go eventually? I mean, can, if it's not sustainable, do you think less and fewer people are going to, you know, go that route like Rob Krar is trying to do?
Well, I that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I think the guys and girls who are savvy about this will, you know, understand that it's fleeting. Their moment in the spotlight is short. You know, 4 or 5 years maybe. So, you know, you take that opportunity to diversify what you have to offer. You know, you look at Rob, he's putting on his running camps now. So, you know, he's building something that's perhaps a little more sustainable there than the, you know, the salary that he might be getting off of the North Face and his various other sponsors, which, you know, won't be there forever. A guy like Tim Olsen is doing the same thing. You know, he's had a tough year running wise this year. I mean, I think most people kind of understand that. But, you know, he's putting on race, or I think he puts on a couple of races. I don't know if he still does those races out in Oregon, but, you know, he's doing his running camps in Boulder. So, I think the guys who, the people who are smart about it, will take this moment and use that to kind of build something a little more sustainable. And, you know, and that's what I did with the race management side of things. So, and that worked out well. So,
yeah, exactly. And it's the same things we see with like Anton and Scott Jurek and Jeff Rose, another great example. I mean, Jeff is it's amazing to me that Montrell has hung on to him after, you know, he literally stopped racing.
Right.
You know, and they've stuck with him all this time because of he still has such a great outlet to the sport. Right. So that's, you know, that's a great point. You have to kind of diversify and have other ways to reach public, you know, than just your performance. Otherwise, you know, we see certain runners that are amazing runners, but they don't really have that exposure in any other parts of their lives to mm-hmm. the running community. So they don't really have that option. Has the sponsorship level grown, do you think, in terms of financial viability from the companies? I mean, are they putting more money into the athletes now? Are deals better, do you think?
Yeah, certainly. I do think the deals have gotten better, and I also think that athletes have gotten a little smarter about what they can expect to get out of a brand, especially if they're a higher profile athlete. And you also see a number of athletes who are not just reliant on one brand, you know, so they're really smart about it. They'll get a shoe deal with a company that doesn't make apparel, and then be able then free to get an apparel deal, which is also worth some cash, and then perhaps a sunglass deal. So they've got paychecks coming in from four or five different sponsors, and if you piece enough of that together, then it becomes viable. And then there's support that's also coming, in the ultra running world from outlets like the Ultra Trail World Tour, for example, or Sky Running. These race series, these race promoters are funding a lot of travel for these guys, and that gets them extra exposure, and I get to travel around the world for free. It's great. the opportunities are definitely have grown in the short time that I've been in the sport. From what I've seen and talking to other people who, are on contracts, etc. How sustainable it is, I don't know. It's still a very niche sport. I continually scratch my head at why companies put so much money into ultra running, considering it's a very, very small sport. But having said that, you look at a brand like Hoka, they had a lot of success getting name recognition through ultra running, and then that springboarded to the broader market. So, I mean,
About Hoka, it's really interesting because I, know people who do half Ironman races or, a full Ironman or even 10Ks, and people will be running in Hokas.
Right.
Which is kind of strange coming, because for running a half marathon as part of a half Ironman, do you really need to wear Hokas? I mean, is that what that shoe was or what that brand was originally intended for? Now it's gaining traction in that broader triathlon market, which is of course much bigger.
Yeah, I mean, it's an established brand now. So, I mean, originally it was like the shoe that would save your knees over the course of 100 miles. It's an established shoe brand. So you're going to see it at 5Ks, you're going to see it at triathlons. They've trimmed down the line. It's not all maximalist big shoes.
Right.
Doctors prescribe them to their patients.
People that aren't even athletes wear them all the time. Right. People work in hospitals or they're on their feet
hospitals,
a lot.
Yeah.
Nick, when I first met you at the Vermont 100, I think it was.
I remember it fondly, guy.
and there was that other British guy there. That other British guy was there as well. I forgot. Yeah. I don't even know how that is anymore. Uh-huh. But one of the things in talking to you and to him, I was kind of interesting about how much it was costing both of you to fly out to Vermont or to fly to do the Grand Slam in terms of travel, how much it was costing you and that you were, because I think you were saying that you had to, and he was saying that you had to, connect someplace else to get back home. And it was a whole travel thing, right? It was complicated travel.
Yeah.
It kind of surprised me because you weren't getting money necessarily to pay for your entire ticket. You had to pay, if I'm remembering this correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you had to pay to do the travel for these events.
God, imagine that.
Kind of funny because you were sponsored, right? I mean, this is, again, were trying to break the record of the Grand Slam. I mean, you were putting up results. You were in a flipping movie, if not you were, not necessarily the star of it, but there was you, Nick Clark, running Western States 100 in Pearl Izumi. But yet you were paying to having to travel to do the Grand Slam, which your sponsors would benefit from. So that was kind of surprising me a little bit.
Well, I mean, without kind of going into the complete details of my contract with Pearl, there's a paycheck at the beginning of the season, which ostensibly is to cover travel expenses, and it's essentially a stipend. So you use that as you will. And then, you know, there were some incentive bonuses built into the contract as well. So, you know, I got a result. I got results at a couple of those races. So that was a paycheck. And yeah, I mean, yes, I paid for the ticket, but I also received a check from Pearl at the beginning of the year to cover those costs. So.
If I wanted to be a professional ultra runner, again, I don't want to know your details with Pearl or whoever, but like, what kind of numbers are we talking about here? When you say like a person might get money from a sponsor at the beginning of a season, I know it's a graded scale based upon how well known a person is, et cetera, but just ballpark it for me. Like, what are we talking about in terms of actual dollars?
Well, what do you think it is? What do you think a top performing athlete in the ultra running world is getting from the Salomon or the North Face?
I would say something around $2,000.
Oh my God. Okay, can I chime in?
Sure.
So I would say my guess, I don't know, today it would be difficult because I don't know, I've kind of gotten out of touch over the last 2 years of, you know, what people are doing, but I would say like Nick said, there's a lot of different ways that money's coming in. It's
right.
it's a full-time job managing those sponsorships. You have to renew them,
yeah.
keep them happy. There's a lot of obligations that go along with them. It's not just like, hey, wear our clothes and you're done. You know, you have to do a lot of stuff too. But I would say like an apparel sponsor, I would be looking for something like $20,000 a year as a check, plus all the clothes and stuff that you want to wear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a shoe sponsorship, I don't know. I would be looking at something similar to that, maybe like 10 or $15,000 plus, you know, shoes. And then, you know, a lot of smaller deals. Like the other stuff would be mostly product, like, you know, fuels and things like that, like gels. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it all depends on how hard somebody works it, you know. Yeah, I mean, you're not far off. I mean, there are certainly people who are making more than that in the sport. You know, if this is a full-time gig for you, then I don't know. What's a living wage? Like $30,000 a year?
For me?
Not here.
That would be amazing.
Not even close.
So, you know,
you're living in a van by the river, maybe.
You're not retiring on it.
Right.
Again, it all depends on who you are, what kind of visibility you have, and but there are more than a handful of guys and girls in the sport who are making a living just from sponsorship contracts that they can legitimately live on.
And that, that includes like no health insurance too, right?
Yeah, that comes free.
No, but I'm asking quite seriously because you just talked about you did, you know, doing the Grand Slam, and after doing, you know, an event like the Grand Slam, you can actually experience negative physiological effects, right? Your body is worn down, so you got to be out there for the sponsor. You're doing these races, which are arduous. You're training for them, and if you're doing that for $20,000 or $30,000 a year and no health insurance,
right?
And this is pre-Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you have to go get blood tests because you're experiencing, you know, significant fatigue. How much is that going to cost you?
That's a serious question. That's why you hold on to the full time job. But you know, there comes a point where that's not sustainable. You know, you got to be fair to your employer. Yeah, I mean that's a valid question. So you know, like I said, you know, you're not retiring on this. So you have to be smart about it and use the time that you have, where you know people are interested in what you're doing, to build something sustainable.
And that's actually one of the things I used to talk about with Tim is, you know, should elite athletes have some kind of healthcare coverage through a primary sponsor? Not all of them, not if you're getting like a free pair of shoes a year, but I'm talking about if you're of that upper echelon, where you know you're out there as the main person, the main elite athlete team. Should there be some kind of, you know, employee health insurance coverage that you're able to get through your employer? And I just kind of throw it out there.
I mean, you know, and I don't know that the people, you know, guys and girls on the bigger contracts don't get health insurance covered. Maybe some, if they're smart, maybe some of them negotiate that in. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, if they're considered an employee of the company and they're required to do, you know, this, that, and the other in terms of promotional appearances, then probably there is some leverage there to talk about benefits like health insurance. But again, you know, it all comes down to being smart and negotiating a good contract when the time comes.
Do ultra runners have agents, sports agents?
Well, that's interesting. So I was out at the Outdoor Retailer Show last week in Salt Lake City. And so I was talking to a guy who actually just quit his job to become an agent. And so this guy works with race promoters in terms of finding them brands to work with, but he also works with or is trying to develop a network of athletes that he can work with in order to negotiate deals for them. And, you know, he's primarily in the ultra running, trail and ultra running space. And then as I understand it, there's a company out in California, kind of the Bay Area, I believe. I can't remember the name of the company, but they represent like Debo and a bunch of those guys up there in Northern California. So they're actually working with agents. So
it's not a bad thing. I mean, some folks, I would say, need it. Well, I remember, not to sound name droppy, but I was running with Jeff Rose like 6 months after his it literally the most incredible ultra race I've ever witnessed, at his run at the 2010 Western States. So I was running with him about 6 months after that, and I was getting ready for the Bear 100, and we were up on the top of Green Mountain in Boulder. And I was like, so you're going back to Western States, obviously, this year. And he's like, I don't know, Montreal, I'm not sure if they're going to, you know, give me the money to go to it. And I was like, I couldn't even think of what to say. I was just like, you're kidding me, really? I mean, how can they not? I was like, I will save the money and buy you a plane ticket to go back just to be able to see the race again. So, I mean, it just lends to that fact that, you know, some of these guys would benefit greatly by a savvy agent. You know, if it costs 15% of whatever you get, I mean, 15% of $100,000 is a lot better than $0, you know.
You know, the sport's changed. I mean, that 2010, I don't say it was the dawning of the era of pro ultra runners, but I think that was kind of the start of the explosion in the interest of the sport, and then, of course, the money that goes into the athletes as
far and away. I would say you nailed it. I mean, it was absolutely to me, because that's when after that we saw the emergence of the Salomon team, you know, and that they're just dismantling of the sport in terms of the management of the team, how they strategically send certain racers to certain races that, you know, are going to do well at, instead of just happenstance, like, oh, I feel like doing the Grand Slam this year, you know. Even though Vermont is kind of flat and, you know, a fast run, I'm not very good at it, I'll go ahead and do it anyway. You know, they're sending specific guys and gals to really just, you know, clean house at certain races. So I think you nailed it. I mean, 2010 was where the sport kind of took off in terms of competitive nature, and that's where I was kind of really getting excited to see where it was going. And since then, I think it kind of leveled off, and at least in my opinion, and it seems like there's no real organizational direction to it anymore. You know, what Salomon was doing in the beginning there. But like I said, it's just opinion. But yeah, that's interesting, that, you know, that point about sports agents. I think it's something that we may see more of, until, you know, the athletes become more savvy. I see it a lot in motocross, where agents were pretty big, you know, a few years ago, and now they've kind of dropped off from the favor of the athletes. You know, they're handling a lot more of their own deals, and their folks are handling them for them and things like that, because they're getting smarter at it and realizing that there is money out there, and they just need to be, you know, good at getting it. Good topics. What do you see yourself doing in, say, 10 years? What are you going to...
10 years.
Yeah.
Retiring off of Dana's salary.
Because now, as I read on your outdated blog, you are now among the master's ranks.
Yes, that's right.
Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, Gary and I already pointed out that he and I are almost out of the master's ranks now and moving into, what do they call it, Gary? What's the next one, like the grand masters or something?
I don't even know. I think it's like the wheelchair division.
The veterans.
I think we need to make a walker with like rugged wheels on it. I think that might be our next brand opportunity. Then you can attach a selfie stick to it.
That's awesome. Film creation extension. Exactly. Anyway, so now that you're among us, veteran masters runners, what do you see yourself doing in 10 years?
Well, hopefully, number one, still running and enjoying it.
Competitively?
In 10 years, you know, I'll be 50 plus. So, you know, competitively, maybe against my peers, my age group peers, I'm sure. I've always kind of had a competitive spirit, so I'm sure there'll still be an element of that.
Carl Meltzer,
yeah. No, I mean, I like to think I've still got a couple of good races left in me where I can compete against the youngsters in the sport. I think I'm going to give Steamboat a crack here in 5 weeks. We'll see how that goes. There is some Masters money, so I can fall back on that if I find out that I cannot compete with the youngsters anymore. Hopefully, you know, the business will still be going strong. You know, my son will be, how old will he be? He'll be 18, 19. So he'll be off to college, and maybe, you know, he'll be part of the business too. That would be exciting if he's interested in getting involved or in running or event management or anything like that. Maybe I'll be on the beach sipping cocktail. Who knows?
So when you find the moment where you can't compete with the young kids anymore, will you feel the need to craft a retirement letter? You'll be like, you know, Nick. It's kind of a jokey question, but it's also kind of a serious question because, again, you are a pro. You know,
I've never considered myself a pro.
Well, that raises another question.
I've always been very realistic about the talent that I have or lack thereof. You know, I always kind of cringed at the ultra running scene where these guys talk about how great they are and, you know, they're pro ultra runners and all that BS. But, you know, I've never had any significant talent when it comes to running. I've just, you know, the 100-mile distance is just a whole different animal. So you can perform there even if you don't necessarily have that kind of high-end speed talent. But anyway, carry on.
But you say that, but I was just reading an interview with you in Colorado Runner Mag where it describes you as the stud. Please comment.
Not my words, Gary.
This is what we caught up with the stud, is what it says, to review his 2014 season and talk about his 2015 plan. Okay. So you may not see yourself this way, but apparently others have this opinion of you of being a stud.
All right. Do I need to announce my retirement from competitive racing? Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's an interesting question for me because, I mean, I know people, like I one person we had in the show recently, or maybe about a year ago, Mo Bruner-Roy, who was professional cyclist, and we talked quite a bit about sponsorship as well, among other things. Uh-huh. She just retired. Now, she was, you know, not making a quote-unquote living solely by being a professional cyclist, but she was a professional cyclist. She was sponsored. She was competing in elite races in Europe and in the United States. I mean, so it raises an interesting question for these kind of sports. At what point are you a pro or not? And then how do you then transition from not racing at that level anymore if you have this kind of following where, like last year, people might look at your results and say, you know, what's going on with Nick Clark? He's not, you know, performing to the level he was the year before. And, you know, so dealing with those expectations that might be out there, whether you see yourself as that level of person or not.
Personally, I don't see myself as that level of athlete. I mean, if others look at me that way, then great. But, you know, if you're going to make the comparison with cycling, then I think it's a lot more defined in cycling what a pro athlete is, because there's a pro category, right? You have these categories in cycling. Whereas in ultra running, you don't compete at certain levels. You just run the race, and, you know, if you have a good race, you win. You know, the definition of a pro ultra runner, as far as I can make out, is whether or not you have a sponsorship contract. And, you know.
Yeah, which you did, so you were a pro.
I was pro, too. I was pro, Gary.
So when I no longer have a personal sponsorship contract with any companies, do I then announce that I'm retired?
I don't know.
Does it happen organically?
I don't know. I mean, you could say the same argument about marathon runners, right? There's no pro category per se in a marathon.
True. True.
But yet there are people who are considered pro by virtue of their results.
And also announced their retirement from competitive running. No, I would never feel the need to announce that I have retired from trying to be competitive. I think I will try, you know, if I line up at a race, I race it as hard as I can every time. You know, if it gets me first place 3 years ago and it gets me 54th place 8 years from now, then I'm sure I'll be just as satisfied.
It's an interesting point, because I know a bunch of people who have, you know, were very fast at one point. You know, I know fast is relative, but they were finishing at the top of their events, whatever event they were competing in. And then when they can no longer compete at that level, they don't want anything to do with the sport because they find it unfulfilling. You know, I mean, you know, you probably know people like this as well.
Sure.
So it's, you know, to hear you say that, it's more about the experience of competing regardless of the level you're at is, I think, an important point to keep in mind for people that, you know, it's a shame when people no longer can enjoy the event because they can't place as high as they once were.
Right. And I think it also has a lot to do with, you know, what else you get out of the sport. You know, for me, it's always been about kind of running with others and going on cool long runs and sharing that experience. And, you know, like I said earlier in the show, you know, I was talking about building community here in Fort Collins. You know, that's a huge part of it for me. So just because I'm not competing at the front end of races anymore doesn't mean that I'm, you know, I'm not interested in still kind of sharing the trail with friends and whatnot. And, you know, part of that is going to races and doing it there. So, I'll always have that, whether, you know, I'm competing at the front of the field or the middle of the field or the back of the field. So, you know, maybe for guys who are really kind of true top-end elite athletes, who spend the majority of their time, you know, either in a very focused training group or training by themselves, then, you know, it's all about performance. And if you're not getting the results anymore, then I can understand why it might not appeal anymore.
Right.
Yeah, so think about like a bell curve on a graph. At this point in your, we'll call it a career, even though you shunned the pro name. Mm. What part of that bell curve are you on right now? Would you say that you're at the peak of it in your career, or are you on the downslope, or are you still, do you still think there's a couple of years there where you might even get better?
Performance-wise?
Yeah.
Oh.
And fire, like, in the heart. I mean, because you're one of the guys
I think of. If I were honest with you, and I'll try and be honest with you, I would definitely say the last year, maybe two, I have felt that the peak has been reached, and I'm kind of a little bit on that downward trend, both in terms of my motivation to get out there and bang out the miles that I need to do to be competitive, and you know, also my durability. I've definitely seen that kind of suffer over the last year or two. And the top end speed is, and that may just be a function of not getting the miles in like I used to. But it's tough, you know. I'm a runner that thrives off of big mileage. And you know, as your kids grow older and you know things change, then it's just tough to get those miles in. So yeah. I don't know whether that's a function of age or just me not really being able to get the training in that I need to get in.
Well, if you want me to send you my 200-meter workout I just did.
Hey, Gary, I did a 200-meter workout on Tuesday as well. Actually.
That's the old guy workout. That's the old guy go-to, the 200 meters. 400 meters, you're risking things. You know, so the 200 meters is just in that sweet spot.
Yeah. I don't know, man. My glutes are hurting still from Tuesday.
Oh, gonna have the OTS and yeah,
DOMS. Yeah. I got DOMS from 200 meters at 2 miles.
See, now I don't know where they. So, like we were talking about earlier with the Grand Slam, I think, you know, talking about my business partner Pete Stevenson. You know, he struggled after the Grand Slam. You know, I had a little bit of that going on as well. So that was 2013, and then I did some stupid stuff last year in 2014. Like in February, I went out and did a stage race in Costa Rica. That beat the crap out of me. And then I went out to Japan and raced the Mount Fuji 100 in April. And then I found myself on the starting line of Western States in June, just exhausted and like, oh God, I don't want to be here. That wasn't too smart. So it took me a while to recover from that. And really just kind of the beginning of this year, I felt like I was through that funk. And I was actually able to put in a good training block so I was out in Italy in June racing the Laboreto 100K. And, you know, I felt like I had a good race there. I mean,
yeah, ninth place was great.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't podium like I thought I could do. But I was within 20 or 30 minutes of the time that I thought I could run.
Solid. Yeah.
Maybe slightly towards, you know, the downslope on the bell curve, but still solid.
Were you the first Masters?
Probably not in this sport, man. God, some of the guys are. Geez,
no, I didn't even check.
I'll check for you right now.
Yeah, okay.
Is Jeff Browning going to be racing Run Rabbit Run again?
He's not. No, what's Jeff doing? He's racing UTMB, I want to say.
He's a freaking monster, man.
He is a monster. That guy's got longevity. You know, and he's a 100-mile specialist, and he keeps knocking out great results. So I got a ton of respect for Jeff.
Yeah.
You know, and he's got 3 kids, and he's got a full-time job, and yet he's still getting it done. And a real smart, nice, savvy guy.
Yeah, I've had him on the show. He was one of my favorite people to have on. It was an amazing show. So that brings me to the training stuff too. You talk about how things have changed. Has your training changed? I mean, I know you're probably not, like you said, knocking out the big miles that you used to enjoy doing, but have you altered that at all to augment the outcome of it, like doing more hard workouts now and shorter, or is it just kind of less miles and the same type of workouts?
Yeah, no, I mean, I've always, so, you know, my training philosophy has been, you know, when I was really training hard and, you know, getting good results at Western States and other races, the backbone was mileage. So for 3 months before Western States, I'd be banging out 100-plus mile weeks, relentlessly. And then that would be with, I would try and get an interval session in, and then I would try and get a tempo session in. So two workouts a week, long runs on the weekend, and then, you know, heavy mileage with heavy vertical in between. That I cannot do anymore. I still try and get the workouts in, and the long runs. So those are the key pieces. But I've really dropped a lot of the kind of filler mileage, running up and down horse tooth, endlessly, which is my local peak here. I probably dropped, well, leading up to Lavaredo, I was in the 80 to 100 mile range volume wise for 10 weeks. But probably only 4 weeks at 100 plus, so definitely a reduction in volume, but I would say the quality was still there. Like I said, you know, I'm a guy who on the top end, like, you know, leg turnover, speed wise, is, you know, I've never had a great deal of talent there, so that's something that I have to stay on top of, I think, in order to remain competitive.
Good point. So those 200-meter workouts,
yeah,
going to pay off.
Yeah,
that's right. This is my great strategy. Do them once a week. It's all I need. Just once a week. Maybe work up to 400s. Don't want to push.
Are you getting ready for a mile here, Gary? What are you training for?
I have no idea. It's actually a good question, because we have cyclocross season coming up, and cyclocross can involve some running, but not. Uh-huh. My whole kick right now is I like to be able to do things.
Right.
And so I like to be able to, if I want to go out on a 4 or 5 hour mountain bike ride, I want to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. If I want to go out for like a really long run in the mountains, I want to be able to do that. I've been doing some roller skiing as well, getting ready for cross country skiing, because I'd like to be able to do that. So it's not been very focused. It's been more about just trying to be more healthy and being able to do a lot of different things that I just have fun doing, because I'm not going to be good at any one of them, like really good. I'm decent, right? But I'm not going to compete for the win in anything. So just being able to have fun and be versatile, you know, and especially quote unquote at this age, I'm 45, is just where my head's been at. So I had time to run on a track. The track was available. I thought, I'm out doing a tempo run. Might as well go to the track and try to do some 200s for no other reason than just to do it.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great attitude, Gary. I love that attitude.
I mean, you know, because what am I going to do with it, right? I mean, I did run a decent Boston this last year. Through a hard winter, I ran 306. Wasn't bad. So, no, thank you very much. And, you know, maybe, you know, I run Boston again next year and I try to get closer to 3. Well, you know, but I'm really jazzed right now about doing Nordic skiing, Nordic ski marathons over the winter, just because I'm really bad at them and it's something that I can get better at. Right. And have fun with, learn a new skill, right?
Okay. It's good. See rapid improvement. It's always good to jump in a new sport, because you get that kind of that rush from the rapid improvement.
Yeah, he got crushed by this guy that looked like Santa Claus.
Oh, I got. I was almost dead last in this 50K classic ski race up in Vermont. And I have never hurt so bad after a race in my life. I'm talking about the next morning. From the neck down, I mean, everything hurt. My back hurt. My triceps hurt. My shoulders hurt. My hips hurt. Uh-huh. Everything hurt.
All those muscles that you haven't used in like 10 years.
Uh-huh. You know, it was just silly how bad I was. But in that silliness, it's kind of like this opportunity of saying, wow, this is a new thing to try to get better at. And so, you know, it's like, why not? You know, why not do some 50K skate races or 50K classic races this winter if we get the snow? Just for the only reason of just doing it. So I have zero focus training right now. I don't have a coach. Tonight I'm going on a 2-hour mountain bike ride with a buddy, and we're just going to rip around the trails and do some intervals. Really unstructured. Why not?
Why not, indeed?
Why not?
Hey, so was that in Middlebury, that classic skate?
No, it was up in Stowe.
Oh, okay. You know, they've got like a new a whole new setup there at Middlebury College for their it's like a Olympic caliber trails or whatever you call it.
We actually had a guest on Elevation Trail, Andrew Gardner, who is a PR rep for USA Nordic, and he lives up in Middlebury.
So that's
a great thing about living. I didn't grow up cross country skiing. I only really got into it the last 2 years. And it's one of those things where as you get older, quote unquote, there can be a tendency to try to find security in not making an ass of yourself, right? like I've been roller skiing, right? And I look gangly. I have knee pads.
Hey, see, Nick laughed just like I do.
By definition, you look like an ass if you're roller skiing.
You look like an ass, and I do look like an ass. But at the same time, it's a lot of fun to get out there and just try to learn how to do this stuff that I've never done before because, again, why not? It's, you know, not letting your self-imposed limits define your opportunities. Wow. Write that down. That's brilliant. So, and then trying to find ways of, you know, reducing your ego through trying things that will make you look like an ass.
Yeah, right.
And that's, you know, another Zen thing. So, yeah, that's doing 200 on the track really slowly. Why not? Going out and doing roller skiing, why not? You know, what other ways can I make myself look foolish? Do a podcast, why not? You know, so that's been my attitude of late, is just doing things for fun and letting the you know, and just trying to have that childlike attitude, because I think you can comment on this. When you get so focused on training, performance, hitting your times, doing intervals, looking up your rankings on Strava, that you can really lose that childlike appreciation for doing
for sure.
any of this in
Absolutely.
The first place.
Yeah. I agree. I applaud you for that attitude, Gary.
Thank you. Well, coming from you, you know how much that means to me. I get your admiration. So we'll talk later. Oh. Hi, Tim.
Hi, how you doing?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Right. I was just looking through some of Nick's results. The Hemez, man, you dominated that race. How is it that you beat like Joe Grant by 45 minutes?
He's a youngster. Like I said, I turned things around. I took a long break over the winter, and I got a good block of training in. Hemez was my last kind of big training run or training race before Lavaredo, so I was in good shape. I was, 20 minutes slower than I think I'd run the course before. So again, another indicator that maybe I'm on the downslope there, but I still had a strong run. And I felt great, and that filled me with confidence for Laborator, and I love that race. Have you ever run that one, Tim?
No, never.
Oh, it's a great race. It's down in Los Alamos, New Mexico, a total community event. It's like a real community effort to put that thing on. They do it right. They have great food afterwards, and you know, it's great trails out there. So I would strongly recommend that race to anybody. I've had good success there, so it was good to get back out there and get another win.
Yeah, I focus on the much larger races. I recently won a 50-miler. I don't know if you heard about it or read about it anywhere, but there were 23 people that signed up, and I pretty much dismantled the
destroyed
whole field.
Yeah.
And the sponsorship deals have come rolling in, haven't they?
Sure.
Well, no, I still have to rely on a long time ago. Someone gave me a Pearl Izumi card.
That's why you're buying the Pearl Shoes.
Discount, yeah. So they don't know I still have it, and so I try to use that as much as possible.
And since we know they don't listen.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be an issue.
I have to worry about it. Other than that, yeah. I go to a running warehouse and go through the clearance section and eat gels that are expired.
Speaking of big events, so did you guys notice that the Leadville Race Series has now been titled?
Yes.
What the hell's the name?
It's like a blueprint architecture for exposure sports lifetime series. I have no idea. It's
so
bizarre.
It's that company name, Blueprint for Leadville Race Series, presented by Lifetime Fitness.
No, here it is. I got it right here. It's the Blueprint for Athletes Leadville Trail 100 Run, presented by New Balance.
Presented by New Balance.
Yep.
Oh, I don't know.
Can't wait to get that shirt.
Milking it. Wow.
I don't understand. That's going to be a big belt buckle. I mean, to fit all that on there, you're going to need a damn billboard around your waist to fit all that on there. I just don't understand. I don't know what Blueprint for Athletes is.
Well, we're talking about it, so...
Yeah, but we're talking about it not... He's going, what the hell is that thing? I was going to search for it, but I didn't want to give him a click. I mean, it's just like, what the hell is happening here?
Yeah.
Then you go on their 2015 schedule. It's amazing how much Blueprint for Athletes Camp of Champions, Blueprint for Athletes Silver Rush 50 Mile Bike.
Yeah, so everything is...
Blueprint for Athletes Silver totally. King and Silver Queen.
What the hell is that?
That's the Silver Rush 50-mile race.
But what's Silver King? Didn't you say Silver King?
Oh, yeah, it's 2 days in a row. One, the first day is the mountain bike on Saturday, and it's the 50-mile, and then the second day is the 50-mile run. Both of them can be Silver King or Silver Queen.
Well, that's
and then,
a new one, right?
And then, oddly enough...
it's been around.
Okay, let's just hold on a second.
Here we go.
Because at the bottom of the page of the LeadvilleRaceSeries.com, it says, series sponsorships. The Leadville Race Series experience is the pinnacle of athletic events, thanks in part to our wonderful sponsors. Interested in becoming a sponsor? For information on our sponsorship opportunities, please contact our sponsorship team. So, I mean, they just sold a series sponsorship, then there's an ad on there to be a series sponsor. I don't know.
Do they still have that corporate challenge thing or whatever?
Oh, and they sell spots for like $10,000.
Yeah, you stay in a trailer, like right on the start line,
and you can meet athletes
like
Nick Clark
afterwards.
Yeah, meet athletes like Nick Clark.
Hey, that comes at a price, Gary.
I know.
talking, you know, you guys are trying to get numbers out of me for you know what the guys are making in ultra running, the top guys. What do you reckon that sells for? The naming rights to the Leadville series. You got to be talking six figures, right?
Yeah, I'd say a couple hundred grand.
Easily,
maybe.
Yeah, easily.
So maybe that's where I'll be in 10 years. My race series will be so big that I'm selling naming rights for $250,000 a pop.
Well, legitimately, even like your races, which are selling out, but they're still smaller because they're on fragile trails. Mm-hmm. Those you could probably start selling title sponsorships for 10 or 15 grand for each of them. You know, and that's, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot, but it adds up over time, and, you know, it's nice money, but, you know, and then it gets to the point where it's a ridiculous name, you know. Pretty soon it's the, you know, the Great Harvest Breg Company Quad Rock, you know, 50 miler, and then you have to start using that name all the time. So what do you, you know, that brings me to another point, too. What do you think of, like, where Leadville's gone? People all know how I feel about it.
You know, it's a tough one. It's, you know, it's obviously an iconic race, especially here in Colorado. You know, I kind of had my bitch fest, when was that? That was probably one of the last blogs I wrote, was bitching about, the Leadville. It wasn't last year, but it must have been.
Well, we all know.
It was 2013, that's right. Yeah. So I think that was like the first or second year after Lifetime had bought the series, and it was a shambles. But, you know, they turned it around last year, and it was a great event last year from what I saw. I was out there. I paced Mike last year at that event, too. I don't know. I guess it is what it is. People are still supporting it. They're still signing up for it. They're still enjoying it. So more power to them, I guess, if they're making shit tons of cash.
Has it become kind of a rock and roll, you know, series, you know, the marathon series type thing to you in your mind, like it has to me? I mean, it's lost all its flavor as, you know, this traditional, hardcore, you know, one of the icons of the sport. in terms of an event.
There's definitely an element of that, and obviously you see a lot of people coming in. They know the brand, they know the name, and they're there to check it off their bucket list of races that they want to do. So you get that element. But at the same time, you know, being in the Colorado ultra running community here, there's still a lot of excitement that leads up to Leadville. People are still genuinely excited about the race.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Regardless of the fact that it is kind of, you know, a rock and rolly type thing now. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm kind of torn on it, and I try not to think about it too much.
Yeah,
but I do laugh at the length of their stupid name now.
Yeah, and they're a lot like the North Face series races too, where they try to disjoint themselves from the rest of the community by housing all their results and, you know, their list of event or entrants and things like that. They're not, it's not, you know, ubiquitous like it is for other races where you can go to one place like Ultra Sign Up and read all the results and all that stuff. Like, you know, you can't find Leadville results on Ultra Sign Up. You know, you can't find North Face results on Ultra Sign Up. So it's, you know, I don't know if they're shooting themselves in the foot or if they're very smart by keeping it all, you know, kind of under their own roof.
I don't think they're shooting themselves in the foot at all. I think the majority of their customers have no idea what Ultra Sign Up is. Mm. You got that community still who are, you know, the hardcore trail runners and ultra runners who know what Ultra Sign Up is. And by the way, Ultra Sign Up is a profit making company itself.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not saying it isn't. I'm just saying it's something where it's a general place where people can get, you know, most results.
Right.
You know, and a lot of people think that it's like the gospel. You know, they go there and it's like, oh, you've only run, like, you, it looks like you've run 67 races. I'm sure you've run probably 30 more than that aren't listed on there, 130 more than that, you know, that aren't listed on there. So it's just, you know, it's a place where people go and, it's, you know, to look for results. And in terms of that, the places, you know, races like Leadville and North Face just don't even exist on there.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, they do all their own timing, and I don't know. If I was a race series of that size, I would definitely want to house all my results on my own domain and website. But who knows what the hell happens to Ultra Sign Up 3 years from now and where your results go.
Well, plus the traffic that you get in there, and you go to your other sponsors and say, well, look at all the people that come to our site. You know,
exactly.
Eyeballs are on this.
Mm-hmm.
Good points, always. Hopefully I'll get out to Leadville, and I'm really excited. I didn't know you were going to be out there, so Gary will be jealous if I'm out there taking
pictures. Very jealous.
Running
around.
You
not making the trip this year, Gary?
I am not making the trip. Actually, you will appreciate this, Nick. So my family is traveling back to Michigan to visit family. I cannot go because of work obligations, so I'll be at home by myself.
Okay.
And you can't put a price tag on that you, for any kind of sponsorship opportunity. You can't put a price tag on the opportunity of being in your own house by yourself for a few days. It gets weird because when it gets really quiet in a house that you used to control chaos, it starts to feel really weird after a while.
You need to think up some adventures, Gary. You know, you've got like 48 hours to get out there and do some crazy stuff.
I know, right? My daughter said that.
You have to come by a certain hour.
I'm so old. I told my daughter that, and I said, she goes, so you can do a lot of different stuff. I said, like, what, paint the hallway? She goes, oh, that sounds boring. I'm like, yeah, exactly. But, you know, at least I'll have some space to get things done around the house without kids constantly bothering either me or my wife. So that's why I'm not going to Leadville. I cannot make the trip for the whatever it's called, Leadville, although I would love to. I mean, I would love to be out there and hang out. That was a lot of – there's nothing better than going to a race like that and not racing because it's just fun.
Right.
Totally. It's just fun. You can just kind of hang out, you know, even though, you know, the fact that Tim left me and, you know, I had no – you know, none of my clothes to wear and I had no way to get back home from the finish line after pacing. And
I was tired. You know,
and I had to go back to a place, and Nick was dead on the couch, and there was no electricity, and I was in a basement sleeping next to a quad, you know, freezing to death. Other than that, it was a pretty good time.
And thank you, Brandon, for putting us all up.
Yeah,
thank you, Brandon. It was very, very good. It was very good. But Tim can't say anything bad about Brandon right now because Brandon's Tim's boss. So
wait, what?
Yeah,
Oh, okay. I didn't get that memo. Oh, cool. Good for you.
Don't tell him that we're doing the show right now.
Stop what we're talking about.
He doesn't listen, so I'm supposed to be working, actually.
Is Brandon running Leadville?
He is not. This is his first year in several years that he is not running it. He is doing pacing duties. He's like a lot of us. He's kind of stepped back from the normal thing that he does with ultra running, which is hammer yourself into the ground and, you know, until you can't even think straight.
And he's going to the CrossFit World Championships, actually.
Yeah, he started CrossFit. So he's reaching out and trying new different things to kind of regain both physical strength and mental strength to get back into it. You'll see him at the Run Rabbit Run. He's
jacked.
Yeah, he's going to – well, let's not get carried away. He'll be there.
His shirt will be off, I hope.
Of course. Shirt will be off. He'll be wearing his size diaper-sized shorts, and he'll be racing that. He needs a Hard Rock qualifier so he can get in the lottery for that.
So he's doing his team, but okay, cool. I'll see him out there.
Yeah. He'll be outpacing somebody looking to run probably around 24 hours or so. So you may not see him because you and Ace will be halfway through your third pitcher of beer by the time they finish. But hopefully,
Mike will be drinking soda. He doesn't drink beer.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah, I hope Mike wins, man. That would be awesome. He's such a nice guy and so much talent. It's just, it's amazing watching him out there running. I've watched a couple of videos recently. In fact, you talked about him having trouble on Hope. I've just watched a video yesterday of you guys making your way back up the backside of that thing.
Uh-huh.
And I remember I was at Twin Lakes last year watching, and remember seeing you guys come through, and I was like, oh, God, he doesn't look good at all.
He was in a bad place.
He looked grumpy, and then Rob Krar looked like a freight train with fire-burning eyeballs coming through there. And I was just like, I feel sorry for anybody trying to catch that dude.
Yeah.
I always find when people look bad like that, if you shout encouraging words like, you can do it.
You look good.
It really helps.
You look good.
You look great. You can do it. You're almost there. Also,
well, the thing with Mike, though, he's such a nice guy out on the course. When he's falling apart is when he gets nicer and nicer. I remember Wagner, Lucho, and I saw him. We were at that point pretty far in front of him, actually, in 2012. And Tim had passed him over on Hope somewhere, and we were coming back out of Winfield. And went by him, and he was the nicest guy. I'm just like, hang on, dude, you can do it. I think it was his first year he was running it, and I was just like, hang on, you can finish. And he's like, my day's done. You guys have a good one, though. And I was like, oh, all righty. He was just such a good guy, you know, and he was just in miserable shape. So, good luck to him.
Well, it was interesting, you know, like when his mind was still in the game going up Hope Pass, you know, he was very focused. But then as soon as things started falling apart, coming down Hope Pass, all of a sudden, you know, the conversation starts. He's asking everybody that's coming up the other side how they're doing. And I was like, oh, that's not a good sign.
No. you
went to Twin Lakes and he got refocused. And it was good.
Yeah, your face, you look kind of grumpy coming through there. So I could tell that you were just like, we need to get this dude refocused here.
Right.
So that's good.
But no, this year, I mean, he's been killing it. I think he's gotten like course records at like all the lead up races in Leadville. I know he got the marathon record. He got the. He came around my Quad Rock 25. He crushed that. Got the record there. He got the record at the 50 mile race. I don't know if he's doing the 10K this weekend. Maybe he is. He'll probably get the record there. So,
yeah, that's exciting. I'd love to watch him.
He may even have a shot at Matt Carpenter's 15:40 whatever.
That'd be so amazing.
Nobody's even come close.
Yeah. Yeah, what is the second fastest time there? 16:05 or something like that? I mean,
it used to be Tony's time for the longest. Tony ran like a 16:15. He was within about a half an hour. I'm not sure. Oh, Rob Krar, I think.
Yeah.
It's off of that.
He did. I think, say, a 16:08 or 7 or something like that. Anyway.
So still a good ways off.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. That record is just amazing, to say the least, and that was back
it's breakable. It's not as stout as Matt's record on Pikes Peak. That record is just in a different hemisphere.
Yeah,
the Leadville record will go down soon.
Well, what do you think it's going to take to break the Leadville record? I mean, is it the run out to Winfield?
No, obviously it's all about the run back from Winfield, and it's about executing all the segments and not having a bad segment. You know, Mike, I can't remember what he ran last year, but he ran from May Queen to the finish in, I think, 150. It may even have been 149.
Oh, I know. Yeah, we had him on the show afterwards, and it was just like, it was disgusting. That's faster than most people run out to May Queen at the beginning of the race.
And that's downhill
exactly.
to May Queen at the beginning of the race. You know, so he's running uphill at the same pace as the lead runners are running downhill on fresh legs. So, you know, if he hadn't been, like, sitting on rocks coming down Hope Pass, he would have been half an hour quicker, which would have put him in the ballpark. So
We've all been there. Yeah, I've sat on plenty of rocks and logs coming down that run. I'd love to watch it. I'm going to be, because I know everyone's interested, I'm going to be at the Silverton Alpine 50K that day racing that. So, yeah, it's pretty much about the same size as the Leadville 100, pretty close.
I'll be painting a hallway. Own little private hell trying to... finish painting things and finish projects around the house. I'll blog about it. I'll take some pictures of myself. Try to get sponsors by Sherwin-Williams or something like that, so I can put that together.
Yeah. Well, your second BFF in the world, aside from Nick, is Jamil Khoury. So while I'm at the Silverton Alpine 50K on August 22nd, you can, you know, I'll get on the phone with them and we can have like a three-way conversation and I'll introduce you and Jamil, and you can start that relationship, too.
He's only my BFF because I was coordinating the Jamil Khoury Memorial event after his demise at Barkley when no one knew where the hell he was. I was planning the memorial.
Nick, we had a memorial show prepared already because Gary insisted that Jamil was dead.
I thought he was dead. Gone. And no one cared. Everyone was like, Jamil's not back yet.
He ruined it by coming back.
Lazarus rising from the grave. It's like, damn it. There goes that show.
Anything else, Nick, burning on your mind that you want to get out there?
Oh, jeez, no. Not really.
Have you started the retirement letter yet that you're going to send out to fans for retiring from ultra running?
You know, I'm just going to let it happen organically. There's not going to be a cutoff point. I'm just going to slide into obscurity.
That's so dramatic.
Awesome. What happened to that guy? He used to run. He you know, was friends with Gary.
We can do a memorial show.
Nick Clark Memorial Show. Yeah. R.I.P. Nick's career.
Yep.
You know what I'll be most famous for is pacing Mike H. to the Leadville course record. If it happens, maybe that's what I'll go down in history for.
That's what we know about you. You're a giver. You are a giver. Everyone says.
No. You know, what stands out to me is your Hard Rock Western States double that year. That's probably the peak for me of your career anyway. Is it something that you really admire that you did? That you look back and think, wow, I couldn't have done better.
That was only 4 years, so that was 2011. Yeah, you know, I felt like I was indestructible back in those days. And, you know, clearly we're not indestructible. And, you know, I think a lot of people go through that phase. And then they get destroyed. But the last 20 miles there at Hard Rock were complete agony. I remember I was trying to chase Dakota Jones down for second place. I think we came into the KT aid station like 20 miles from the finish together, or it may even be less than 20 miles from the finish. I can't remember. And Scott Jaime was pacing me. And he's like, come on, Nick, come on, one last effort. And so we pushed hard for 45 minutes, and then from there to the finish was just, oh my god, it was agony.
Is that the race where you lost your shoe off the side of the mountain?
That's the race where, yeah, off the it's off of, what's it, is it Grand Swamp, is that, yeah.
Yeah, the real gnarly.
Where they have the memorial thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That was funny. If anyone doesn't know, Nick dropped his shoe, and it didn't catch on like a little rock.
It catched on like some shrubbery, like right before the cliff face, there, and this is the middle of the night. It's pitch black. It's a pretty slope. And I'm like, and we're sitting there, and Scott takes off his shoe and gives me his shoe. And I'm like horrified. I'm like, Scott, you can't run barefoot or on one shoe for the rest of this race. We got to get the shoe. And, you know, like the great guy that Scott is, he risked his life to get my shoe back. And, you know, he scooted down on his butt, found it, and off we went.
Do you still have that shoe?
I probably do. I have a hard time getting rid of shoes, much to my wife's chagrin.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So I had like a big pile of like shoes that I'll never wear again, but I can't get rid of.
You have to dig that one out. That's actually be a nice thing. I bet you could sign that off and sell it. Sell it on eBay for a couple hundred bucks.
I think about selling some of my belt buckles on eBay, Tim.
Dude, I'll tell you what. It's a good living.
Yeah, so I hear.
Yeah. It's been awesome having you on the show. It's such so refreshing. To have you on and not just have Gary and myself droning on.
Yeah, it's awful, isn't it?
Yeah, I know.
It really is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we don't have much to talk about. I mean, my small 50-mile race and your 200-meter workouts. I mean,
it might be a hallway painting.
Good Lord. I don't know. No wonder no one listens to this thing.
It's almost going to be cyclocross season. Well, they don't. It's almost going to be cyclocross season, and then there'll be plenty to talk about. I'm going to make an announcement right here, right now. I'm going to announce that I'm thinking about doing an Xterra triathlon or two next summer. Mm. Thinking about getting back into the pool. Thinking about revisiting my triathlon career, which was storied as an age grouper, and giving that another go.
If you need tips on dog paddle style,
drowning,
yeah, just let me know.
I need a selfie stick flotation device. I can take pictures of myself
as I'm swimming. Creation extension.
Right. Has somebody come up with that device? A swimming selfie stick?
I'm sure they have.
Mine's waterproof. It is. Yeah. So, and you can pick it up if you want. I'll sell them a special deal today, $32. So just let me know. Go to elevationtrail.com. And while you're there, why don't you donate some money too? I mean, we get these great guests on here. We had to pay Nick a fortune to be on our show. So this thing, it costs a lot of money to put this stuff on.
we need sponsorships. Wonder how we get those.
I don't doubt, man. But anyway, it's been a true pleasure, and good luck in your pacing duties. Please tell Michael hello for us. He's a good friend of the show, and we always cheer for him. And gosh, now that I know that he's been crushing it this year, I'll be really watching that race closely. And hope you have fun out in Leadville. And thanks for taking the time today to be on the show. And what's the website for the NAR events?
Yeah, it's just narrunners.com.
Okay. So you folks head over there. Like you said, he's selling these things out. It's a beautiful location over on the northern Front Range of Colorado. Take place throughout the year. He's got all kinds of distances from half marathon up to now he's got 100K. Any thought about putting on a 100-miler?
We've got some ideas.
Playing around with it? Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Good. So thanks for all your time today.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah thanks a lot.
And you listeners out there, I appreciate you tuning in today to listen to our show with the great Nick Clark, who is just now on his...
Stud, Nick Clark.
Coming back from a little hiatus, and he's going to start blogging real soon and writing a bunch of race reports. And as always, have fun out there on the trails. All right, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. It was great talking to you.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on, guys.